This is the Dreamers Podcast, where dreamers share their stories to inspire you. Now, join host Joe Pardo as he interviews a dreamer who's living their dreams.
Hey Dreamers, I'm Joe Pardo, and today I'm talking with Jared Brock, who is making his dreams come true by traveling around the world and helping people to make the world a better place, and I can't get behind that enough. Glad to have you on the show, Jared.
Thanks for having me, Joe.
Thank you for reaching out. I'm so glad to have a fan of the show on, as well as somebody who's making the world a better place.
Well, as I said in our pre-chat, I found the show through, I guess, another podcast, and then I just stuck around, downloaded a bunch of episodes, and I listen to them at double time while I go on walks. So it's a great kind of relaxing activity. So great job, and congratulations coming up on 1 year.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Double time. So is it exciting to listen to at double time, or does it take away some of the flavor?
Actually, I kind of like it because I'm a quick talker. Like, I don't think anyone could actually listen to my podcast on double time, but it's surprisingly, I actually like sometimes listen to podcasts on double time and read a book too. Like, I'm a voracious reader, like at least 50 books a year. So I probably listen to like 30 or 40 different podcasts a week. Like,
wow.
Yeah. I'm a curious George.
Jared, why don't you get started by giving some background about yourself and how you got started traveling around the world and the mission that you were on to begin with?
Well, my wife and I are coming up on 7 years of marriage. We've already been to over 40 countries. We've also road tripped through over 40 American states and 10 Canadian provinces. And we run a charity to fight human trafficking. So we've made a couple of documentaries on the issue. Our most recent one is called Red Light, Green Light, and the charity is called Hope for the Sold. So that's what occupies our time. And more recently, I have become a author as well. So keeping busy.
As we love for people who are on the Dreamers podcast to be doing. So how long were you making these documentaries for?
Well, we first learned about trafficking about 8 years ago now, and we came home and we just said, we'll do something. We didn't know what, so we started like doing coffee shops and art shows and fundraisers. We started this group on this new website called The Facebook. You may have heard of it. And we just tried to, you know, tell everyone who would listen. And I live in Canada, so we didn't have any research on trafficking in Canada. So we ended up driving, like, I think it was like 6,000 miles in 17 days to make a documentary about trafficking in Canada. And then our most recent one took us to 10 different countries to look at different prostitution models and how countries are preventing sex trafficking. We've actually had the opportunity to get two laws changed in Canada to prevent human trafficking. And we've like testified in parliamentary committee, which is kind of like congressional committee. And yeah, it's been a wild ride.
Wow, man. So did you have to get like, how did you get funding for this?
Well, for the documentaries, it's been blog readers, friends, and family. My wife has written over 350 articles on the website in the past 5 or 6 years. Great writer. And so that's been kind of where the fan base has been for that. And then I kind of, for when it comes to film, I come in and you know, do the producing and directing, and then she's the editor and we write together. And so yeah, so that's the film half of things. And then I recently wrote a book on prayer, of all things. I traveled 37,000 miles around the world on a modern day prayer pilgrimage, 12 different countries for that.
Yeah, I mean, that was the first thing I saw when I looked you up, and I mean, it's a crazy ride. I mean, you've even had lunch at the Pope's house?
Yes. Well, that was kind of funny how that happened. So I'm not Catholic, but I figured for my Catholic chapter in this book, I should talk to the head of the Catholic Church about prayer, right? That seems to be the thing to do. So I tried every possible way to meet the Pope. Like, Joe, you have no idea. I even got a fax machine. Like, I was emailing and phone calls and blah, blah, blah. And no doors were opening, and we're working hard and we're praying and just nothing's happening. So we go to Rome. We take the tour of Rome. We go to Assisi. We go to Monte Cassino. We kind of tour all like the cool Catholic sites. And our last night in Monte Cassino, 10 p.m., there's a voicemail on my Skype answering machine. It says, "Hello, this is Monsignor Alfred. Please come to the Doma Sancta Marta at noon tomorrow." And we're like, "We're going to the Pope's house. Holy crap." So we rush back to Rome and nothing is open on Sunday mornings. And we've been traveling for months and we didn't have fancy clothes to meet the Pope. So my wife and I actually met the Pope in jeans and yoga pants.
Oh. No, which Pope was this?
So this is Pope Francis, the newest Pope. Yep.
Wow.
Yeah, so we had a couple of minutes to chat with him and asked him some questions about prayer. And he actually gave us rosaries as gifts, which was really cool. They're stamped with his papal insignia, and it says, "Lowly but chosen." And I thought that was so great. You know, he's a very kind of humble dude. Like, he's entitled to this, like, big palatial mansion, but he lives in a spare room of the guest house and eats all his meals in the cafeteria. He was at the next table for lunch. And, like, I don't know, it was really cool. Like, twice during our conversation, he asked me to pray for him, which I thought was so humbling. You know, here's the spiritual leader for a billion people who understands his need for a power higher than himself. So I was like, man, I want to walk with that kind of humility. So that's a, you know, that's an experience that my wife and I will never forget. We go into the Vatican. We go through like 7 security checkpoints, of course, and we get inside and the Pope's personal aide comes up. He's like, "Hello, Jared. Good to meet you. Who's this?" I'm like, "Oh, this is my wife, Michelle." And he starts singing "Michelle, My Bell" by the Beatles. I was like, Beatles in the Vatican. This is amazing.
Oh, man, that's awesome, man. That's I love the fact that the Pope isn't like the 0.00001% of leaders, you know, of all time, period, when it comes to understanding that you're not the end-all, be-all.
Yes. No, it's good. We all need that reminder.
Yeah, definitely.
Now, contrast that, of course, with somewhere like North Korea, where I got to go for New Year's, and the leaders there actually think they are God. Like, the calendar in North Korea is only at year, like, 115 right now, because it starts from the year of the founder's birth. So it's, like, a whole other mindset, you know? Like, on New Year's Day, I was forced to go to the palace, and you have to bow before their dead bodies. And they're like stuffed in glass coffins, and you go through a wind tunnel that blows the dust off you because you're entering holy ground. So, like, I went into this, and I refused to bow. I just stayed standing and whispered the Lord's Prayer. But, like, they're a completely opposite end of the spectrum, you know, like, of humility versus, like, total pride. It was, oh, man, this world is so beautiful and so broken.
How did you wind up in North Korea? How did you get there?
Well, I'm Canadian, so it is easier for us to get into North Korea. Actually, Joe, they don't call you Americans Americans in North Korea. You're called American imperialists. So now you know.
It's pretty fitting, I would say. Love my country, but yeah, you know, sure. I'd agree with that.
So yeah, I actually had applied to visit North Korea, and I got rejected because they'd read my articles in the Huffington Post and said I was a journalist. I'm like, no, I'm not, but it's creepy that you're searching me. So I ended up applying through another government-sanctioned tour agency, and they didn't see my articles and let me in. So I was there for the 5-day propaganda tour. They took my passport at the border, assigned me a guard the whole time. Our hotel was on an island, so we couldn't escape. It was crazy. Like, you know, there's 200,000 people in concentration camps in North Korea, and I just wanted to go there and, like, pray and bear witness to the suffering. Like, it's a rough place, and I'm hoping for freedom for the future in North Korea, you know?
Wait, time out. We're the imperialists?
Yeah, right. No. You know, it's so sad. Like, over 1 million people have starved to death in the last 30 years in North Korea. Something's got to break. Something's got to happen. And I'm hopeful.
Yeah, no, I it's horrible the way that things are up there. And it's a shame that they don't try to realize that you can get, you know, you can't get was it blood from a stone, but you know, if you make it a little bit sweeter and you may give the illusion of freedom, not throwing that out anywhere.
I'd rather just see full freedom.
I don't know, maybe you have full freedom up there in Canada.
Well, yeah, like, I mean, Canada's a great country for sure. We have one of the most powerful passports in the world, but I think, of course, coming from my perspective, there's a freedom that goes simply beyond political freedom, right? Like, there's an emotional, intellectual, spiritual freedom that I would hope everyone on earth has the opportunity to experience.
Yeah, to be able to travel, to be able to have a house or some kind of living dwelling that's satisfactory to
and to live your dreams and help other people, you know? Like, this world is not about us, right? Like, it's about helping others. And yeah, we pray for world peace, and people often say, I want world peace, but we're never going to have it until we have peace within our hearts. You know, like, I went to Jerusalem and Palestine, and those countries hate each other so much, but they're fighting over like holy ground, right? It's like, forget the dirt. These are human beings. Like, people matter more than anything. So yeah, politics is the worst sometimes.
You know, I was just starting with, like, you got to give people a reason to live, and then a reason, you know, from there they can give more, you know, but you got to give them something, you know what I mean? Like, they got to have a reason to wake up in the morning other than, like, man, I live in a dirt hut that, totally. You know, this is the best as it gets, but, like, you happen to be in the city and you see on, like, a little black and white TV, like, hey, man, America's looking pretty amazing over there. They got all kinds of stuff that we don't, I wouldn't even begin to know how to describe to them. Mm-hmm. But yeah, what were the first steps that you guys took when it came to writing this book on prayer?
This whole book project started in the red light district of Amsterdam. We were filming undercover and the scene was just crazy. There's so much human trafficking that happens in red light districts.
Well, I've seen Taken, so.
Oh, yeah. The most Hollywood version ever. Yeah, but it is horrific. You know, we interviewed girls as young as 12 years old in the backs of cars and parking garages who were, you know, being forced into, you know, all sorts of horrible things. And I was really wrecked for the plight of humanity in that. And I just wanted to have spiritual power to end it. So that's kind of where our journey started. And then we ended up going to Brooklyn and we celebrated Passover with ultra Orthodox Hasidic Jews, like, you know, with the hats and the suits and the whole nine yards. And then I went to Israel and then we went to Mount Athos. It's an all male holy island in Greece. No females have been there in over 1,000 years, including no female animals. They import male only goats and sheep and things like that. Yeah. Yeah, so then I went to, you know, I went to Rome and the Vatican and then Spain, Camino de Santiago, France, and all over the States. I walked across a bed of hot coals. That was terrifying. All sorts of interesting things in this world. So how it was funded was a publisher. I have an author friend who introduced me to an agent, and she was talking with some publishers, and one said, okay, we'll pay for your trip around the world if you'll write a book about it. So I was like, man, that's a huge blessing, and yes, I will totally do that. So that was a good deal. But that came because of years of relationship building and interning with one of my favorite authors. You know, it didn't happen overnight. That was a 4-year process. So you got to put in the hard work for sure.
I love that. It's like, oh, man, you know, the book was, well, they didn't pay you to write the book per se. They paid mm-hmm. for you to travel around the world.
Yeah.
And that experience is, I mean, obviously invaluable. And the book that you've produced is all about prayer from how many different religions did you go through to be able to write that?
Well, it was prayer across the Judeo-Christian prayer family. So including some of the weird uncles and crazy cousins. Like, I went to Westboro Baptist Church, which is not a happy place.
Not really? I thought they were the happiest people on earth next to Disney World.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the mouse has something on them. But, yeah, it was interesting. So, yeah, it was Judeo-Christian prayer tradition. So, like, Catholics, Protestants, Orthodox, Pentecostals, Quakers, all sorts of different Jewish communities, Carmelites, like all sorts of different orders, Benedictines and Ignatians, all sorts of different people. So, yeah, I learned a world of prayer traditions, and some of them were quite weird and some of them were very beautiful.
When you were writing the book, were you writing it while you were experiencing all these things, or did you collect all these videos and things and then go back and rewrite and write it?
So I wanted to just be in the moment while I was doing it. So I didn't do any writing on the road aside from I journal every day. I have a New Year's resolution a couple of years ago to just journal one sentence per day. And if it turns into paragraphs, great, but I haven't missed a day in like 2 years or something. So it's an awesome New Year's resolution. But so I had journal entries and then I had photographs and I came back from the trip and I realized my deadline was like a month away. So I ended up writing a 113,000 word first draft in 3.5 weeks.
Wow. Did you do anything else other than that?
Oh, no. Like, I was sitting or standing at the desk 12 to 14 hours a day, 6 days a week. And I actually, it was so bad that at the end of it, I had a seized left butt cheek and I had to walk it off for days. But I got the book done. Yeah. And the reviews have been great. People have been loving it. It's a humorous book on prayer. That's never been done before. You know, books on prayer are normally quite, you know, boring and or flowy or introverted, whereas we wanted to write something fun. It's reverent, but it's really fun. People laugh a lot in it. So, yeah, that's, 3.5 weeks, 113,000 words is, I don't recommend it, but it worked.
I love how the work was put in before, though. You said 4 years of networking and building, and just for the opportunity to get the opportunity to have a trip paid for so you could put together a book. And you know what's even more crazy is you hadn't written a book before then, though you did have the articles with the Huffington Post, obviously. So you are a writer with some accomplishment to you. So, you know what I mean? Like, it's awesome that somebody saw enough in you to give you that chance. Be like, hey, yeah, we're going to give this guy who never wrote a book before to write a book.
Yeah, like, I mean, I had written for Huffington Post, I'd written for Esquire, a couple of other magazines. That's a great way for writers to get started, is writing articles. Just like writing good content for other publications. It gets you writing credits. And once you've written for the Huffington Post, you've always written for the Huffington Post. No one can take that away from you. You can always say, I've been published in the Huffington Post, right? So huge recommendation for people who are getting started in writing. And I know tons of people who listen to this podcast, of course, are writers or authors.
Yeah, yeah. Getting to write for the Huffington Post is on my to-do list. That's on my bucket list. So I want to get there, and as well as some other things. But Jared, how did your family take it when you told them that you were going to travel around the world and write about prayer? Now, is your family religious?
I don't know if religious is the word. My dad is a pastor, but he's like super cool. Like, he has a motorcycle and he is a golfer and he's an awesome dude. And my mom, every time my wife and I go away, she cries like a baby. She understands that it's because we're doing these projects, like making documentaries or writing books on prayer, but she still cries every time. So I think they're just used to our lifestyle at this point. Like, my sister, she lives in downtown Toronto at Jane and Finch, which is like the gun capital of Canada, working with like inner city Jamaican youth. Like, she's like a street worker with them. And so, like, I think maybe my family's just used to their kids doing dumb things. Maybe that's it. But like North Korea, that's the kind of thing you just keep very quiet and just be like, I need you to pray because I'm going to a really dangerous place this week and I won't have any contact with you.
Hey, at least you weren't American in there.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it's crazy.
What's been your biggest roadblock between both the writing the book and doing these documentaries on human trafficking?
Like, I mean, it's definitely easy to say funding, right? Like, money is like the world's, we could always want more money. But like, I would say like open doors and opportunity is always something that I pray for, right? For favor and open doors to like spread the message, right? Like, I want people to love each other. I want people to treat each other with justice and equality and respect. And that's not an easy sell because it takes selflessness, right? It's less of me, more of others. And so getting that message out there takes a lot of work, but I'm up to the task. So I would say that's a challenge, just like overcoming people's like hesitation, right? Like, it's funny because like I wrote a book on prayer. There are billions of people in this world who have no interest in reading a book on prayer. And yet people who aren't religious at all, who are like security guards at prisons, have now told me, I read your book. I loved your book. I laughed my head off at your book. I gave it to my parents. And I'm like, I can't believe you read it, but something connected on a heart level. And so, yeah, I love that. But yeah, it's definitely the challenge is like getting over that initial hurdle of like, hey, man, we could be friends. Like, we've just both got to find understanding somewhere, right?
So, yeah, common ground. I think that I mean, correct me if you feel differently, but I think a lot of it comes to the level of human and connecting, you know, the idea of a higher being and human, right? And finding that, like, hey, this is like your dad, right? He's a pastor, but he's obviously human. He drives a motorcycle. He enjoys golf. He's not just 7 days a week in the church working for God. He's a human with human characteristics.
Yeah, totally. Like, I mean, A.J. Jacobs has a new book coming out this year about how we're all related. And the most distantly related person on earth is like 55th cousins at most. And I feel like if we could just understand that at the end of the day, we are actually one, that we're actually family, that like that could change a lot. Like, would you treat your neighbor like garbage if they were family? Well, no, of course not.
Most
would
people.
You, yeah, that's true. Yeah, there's always a crazy angle. Would you declare war on this country if you knew that you guys are related, right? Like, I just feel like relationship is the first step towards reconciliation, which is why I went to North Korea, which is why I hung out with the people at Westboro Baptist Church, because I want to understand them. I want to be like, listen, I totally disagree with your horrible signs that you carry at gay people's funerals and soldiers' funerals. But I want us to be friends so that hopefully in the next 10 years, I can convince you to put down your signs and start being loving.
Love, the four-letter word.
That's right.
that just gets thrown out when it comes to my religion and not your religion.
Yes.
You got to tell me some more about that. How was it? How did you go there? Did you just show up and like, hey, I'm here?
Well, so if you go on their website, which is like so entertaining and worth going on, it's just so terrible. Like, God hates you. God hates the world. You're going to burn in hell. The end. Like, it's that kind of website. But they say, if you want to come to a service, it starts at 12:30 at blah, blah, blah. And they give the address. It's in Topeka, Kansas. So I sent an email ahead of time, said, hey, I would love to come to a church service. So my wife and I, we got up at like 2:30 in the morning and drove for like 9 hours straight. And we got there and we're like locked out. And I'm like banging on the door and ringing the bell. And there's like video cameras everywhere, Joe. It was so creepy. And so there's no answer. And now I'm mad, right? Because I haven't had sleep. And I came all this way like, you cowards, you know, picket like soldiers' funerals, but like you can't open your doors when someone actually wants to have a dialogue. I was so mad. So I ended up like walking the block and I realized that all the houses had the same fence and all the houses had video cameras on it. So I peeked through kind of the fence boards and there's no fences in the backyards. They bought up a whole neighborhood, a whole block, and it's like a compound and it's like super culty. But, so eventually I was like, do you know what? These are clearly the houses. And I started pounding on people's doors. So I started knocking on all the doors in the neighborhoods, like seven different houses. And I get back to the church and I guess they'd seen me on the video cameras because someone actually came out. And I ended up spending 2 hours in the founder's daughter's kitchen with her and her husband, who's an elder in the church. And I got to ask them all about like God and their prayer life and like what they believe. And like, it's dark and it's messed up and it's really, really sad. But now that when I see Westboro on the news now, people are like, oh, it's Westboro. And I'm like, oh, it's Westboro. Like, I'm praying for these people. I love these people. I want them to come to an understanding of truth and love and grace. So I'm just as hopeful for the people at Westboro as I am the people in North Korea, as I am for my own heart, because I'm busted and broken and terrible, right? Like, we are all so selfish. Like, we, as kids, we will hit another kid for a toy or candy. That doesn't change as we get oil. We just switch it for oil and money and sex and fame and power. So, yeah, I like the people at Westboro, but they need God. They need something.
I was just watching Dateline or 2020 the other night, and they had this whole story about the – I think it was down in Texas or something. Very similar situation with the compound and stuff, and they're keeping kids. Like, starting to leave the church. And like they have their first Subway in the town and it's like their first like franchise restaurant.
Oh my goodness.
And yeah, it's really sad because they're like, yeah, our daughters, our kids are still in this. They're just keeping them locked away. And the guy's like, yeah, you know, I helped build that compound. There's hundreds of secret tunnels and places for them to hide underground.
Yeah, it's so bad. Like there's connections with that kind of stuff to like human trafficking. And Michelle and I are actually thinking about one of our future documentaries in the near future will probably be about child abuse, because there's so many connections with child abuse to just, you know, to human trafficking and other issues like this. So yeah, it's a terrible thing that civil society simply must deal with. Like, children are to be protected and cherished and valued far more than we currently treat them.
Those are the places that should have rioting.
Yeah, right.
You know, I mean, like, totally. where's the SWAT team there? You know, get Rainbow Six out and just kick in the door.
No kidding.
Jared, what when you were growing up, what was your childhood dreams?
When I was a kid, I wanted to be in the NBA, and then I realized that white man can't jump, and so then I wanted to be an architect so I could design giant mansions for basketball players. And it's very basketball centric, to be honest. But so I ended up coming through high school. I went to a self-paced high school, so I didn't actually have to go to class. So I skipped 56 out of 72 days of my final semester, and I went to real estate college. So I actually graduated from college before high school and became the youngest realtor in Canada when I started. And I like bought a fourplex and flipped it and like bought two cars. Like, I had so much money and so few brain cells. And like, I just was a wreck. And, you know, I was like, I'm going to be a millionaire by the time I'm 30 and all this nonsense. But then I kind of had my spiritual journey started. I had a bit of an awakening. And yeah, I just decided, like, I can either live a selfish life or I can have bigger dreams, dreams that can influence culture and change the world and help people in need. So that's what I focus on now. So my wife and I, we actually live in a 1975 Airstream in a forest, and we don't own cell phones. We mostly buy used clothes. We're carbon neutral. I'm a vegetarian. Like, I have a giant beard, as you can see. We've tried to create a margin of time and money in our lives to focus on projects that we feel matter to the world. So yeah, it's very different. And being an author, I've wanted to be an author since early adulthood, so probably since I was 20.
Your story of high school and all that sounds very Canadian.
Well,
yeah, I went to college. I didn't even. I just showed up when I wanted, and it was just like, whatever. Jared, what do your dreams for the future look like?
Well, the next year will probably be in promoting this book. When you spend a year experiencing it and then a year writing, editing it, that's a 2-year process that you need to then steward to get the book out there. So my wife and I actually set up a second nonprofit that owns the book. So all my author royalties are going to missions and ministry and charity. And my publisher, it's actually the biggest Christian publisher in the world, independent, and they're owned by a nonprofit too. They've given away like $170 million. So all the author and corporate royalties from this book are going to things that matter. So we're really trying to just reach as many people as possible with it so that we can do a lot of good in this world. So that's my dream for the next year. And I'm going to keep telling stories and hopefully helping people. And yeah, that's my big dream would be that everyone would understand that they are loved and valued and that other people matter too. That would be the big dream, but a lot of work.
No, I love it. Love it. Love it. Love it. Jared, before we share how people can connect with you, is there any last thoughts you'd like to share?
Oh, man. This journey was crazy. Like, there's so many things we haven't even talked about. Like, I went to the Camino de Santiago in Spain. I got caught in a cyclone at Cape Finisterre and a blizzard in the mountains near Avila. And, like, I went to Paris and England, and I walked across a bed of hot coals. I don't recommend that at all. 2,000 degrees, blazing hot coals. I had blisters for months afterwards. Like, I don't recommend it at all, but yeah. I discovered like a hometown revival that happened back in the day. And, it's just interesting to see. I am fascinated by people who are selfless. I think selflessness is the most underrated virtue in the world today. And I'm so attracted to people like that who are dreaming, not just for their own, you know, not just like selfishly dreaming, but are dreaming for a better world, for a better future for our kids, for our families, for other nations around the world. And so, yeah, I would just say, like, as dreamers, we need to be continually asking ourselves, is what I'm doing today selfish or selfless? And if we head on that path, the world becomes a far better place for all of us to live in. So that's just a great dream that I think that you and I share. Of course, you're raising a ton of money coming up very soon. And like, I mean, you are caring about issues that matter more than yourself, and those things will outlive you, and that's legacy.
You know, something I've always been big on is social responsibility, whether it's for companies or for personal, you know, people to people. And how it's like, it's not just about like, okay, we need to take care of the environment or anything like that, but just like how, you know, I can help you help change the world. Like, I'm not going to be able to accomplish everything, but I can help in a way that, you know, might inspire the person, someone yes. else, someone else somewhere down the line, maybe even after I'm gone, mm-hmm. to make changes in ways that I can't even comprehend at this point.
Mm-hmm. Oh, totally. Like, someone might be raising or fostering or mentoring the next Gandhi. Like, we have no idea, right?
Yep.
Helping kids, helping our neighbors, loving each other. Like, we're either going to spiral down or spiral up, right? And it's going to take every single person planting those seeds of goodness in their local communities.
Yeah, it definitely starts on the local level before it can go, you know, to the next level of you know, local to county to state to country to world, you know, multiple countries to world. I mean, it's and a lot of times it's all about what you do and how you use that platform that you built. And it, you know, a lot of times you have to start by making it matter. Right. Because people don't always know what they want. I mean, you know, if Apple waited for people to know what they want, we'd still be using Blackberries or Sidekicks or something. So sometimes you have to have the foresight to know that the like, hey, this matters. And people just don't realize it yet. And that's OK. That's OK. But a lot of times it's hard for that person who's making those changes or doing those things to be okay with the daily grind of doing it, because it's like, well, I'm looking around, no one matter, you know, it doesn't matter to anybody. But you just have to know and find one other person, whether it's a spouse or a parent or a child or somebody that gets it. Even if they don't completely understand it, they get like, okay, I could see where this would matter.
Yeah, totally. I agree.
And I thank you for your work, you know, documenting human trafficking. It's something, you know, I've been fascinated by. I don't know if fascinated is the right word, but enthralled by for many, many years, for many different reasons. And when I talk to other people about it, they're just like, well, you know, it happens. And what do you do? You know, what can you do about it? And it's like, well, now I say, well,
stop it.
I know this guy named Jared Brock in Canada and he did do something about it and is continuing to do something about it. Outside of just pretending like it's not really a problem and it's not organized, because it most mm-hmm. definitely is extremely organized.
Yeah.
And it's not just on TV. It's very, very real. It's a shame, because I just want to, again, I just want to like SWAT team every one of those or bring Liam Neeson to kick all their asses. that's what we should be funding with our government money. That's what we should be funding, ending this kind of stuff. But then a lot of times they can't even figure it out in their own backyard. I mean, their story, you know, so many stories come out of the, you know, especially, I don't know about in Canada, but in America, where it's like, oh, the kids were living in the backyard and the neighbors called a few times, but nobody ever checked enough or checked hard enough or cared to really look.
Well, you know, Joe, it's kind of an eye opener, but the biggest trafficking bust in Canadian history was on the street that Michelle and I lived on when we were first married.
Is that what got you started in all this?
No, like, I mean, we had started years earlier and we weren't living on that street when it happened, but like, it happens everywhere. Like, you know, we found trafficking in a strip club beside the church that my dad used to be a youth pastor at. We toured our film to 96 cities around North America, and you know, towns in the States with like white collar towns of 10,000 people. And we'd have girls come up to us afterwards in tears and say, I was trafficked in this town for 2.5 years. Like, it's happening anywhere where men are willing to pay for sex. There is a trafficker who's willing to make a profit by selling someone's body. So we've definitely got to look at the supply and demand and demand for paid sex, because that's a huge, huge driver of human trafficking. Anyways, we could talk about that another time. It's a whole other subject, but anyhow.
Well, you know, one of the things was what the Super Bowl was in New York just 2 years ago. And, you know, one of the articles I was reading was about how detrimental that is to, or how important it is to human trafficking, the Super Bowl in general, bringing all these super high paid people together and looking the other way on human trafficking. It's astounding that people don't. I guess it's the selfish versus the selfless thing that you were just talking about. So, Jared, I would love for you to share how people can connect with you.
Charity website is hopeforthesold, SOLD.com. The film is called Red Light, Green Light. You can just Google all that. I'm on Twitter, Jared Brock. Facebook, Jared A. Brock. My website is livingprayerfully.com. And if you go there, you can actually download the first two chapters of the book for free and watch the video trailer that we made for it. So that's livingprayerfully.com.
I will have all those in the show notes at howtodream.co. It was a great video, and I hope that I'm actually going to check out your Red Light, Green Light because of my interest in the human trafficking world. So thank you again for all that. And thank you for taking the time to come on the show, Jared. I really appreciate it. And I'd love to have you on again in like a year to follow up and see how you've been.
Perfect. Thanks so much for having me, Joe. It was great.
Awesome. Thank you very much.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Dreamers Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at Dreamers Podcast. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/Dreamers Podcast. If you or someone you know would like to be a guest on the Dreamers Podcast, please send an email to j@jpar.co. This podcast is copyright 2014 by jpar.co.
Hey Dreamers, Joe here. I really appreciate you listening to Dreamers Podcast. If you'd like to find out how to support the show, please visit howtodream.co/support for all the ways you can help out. Thanks for the support, and please keep on dreaming.